Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Score! 5-1 St. Louis on the flip from the left point. It is Fowler again, his second goal in his 1,000th National Hockey League game.
That was the Blues, who went on to win the Winter Classic game, defeating the Chicago Blackhawks 6-2, audio courtesy of TNT. And we're joined now by Bernie Miklas. And as always, our Bernie Miklas report is sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Bernie, Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us today. The first time for 2025.
Yeah, happy 2025. Always great to be with you, Amy. And the Blues certainly were impressive putting on a show. And it's always kind of fun to dishearten all the Blackhawks, Chicago sports fans.
It is. And that's the laugh, the dulcet tones of Mike Elam, Bernie, who's filling in for Chris Ronji, who was in Chicago for that Winter Classic. And what I love about Chicago is that you can pretty much always kick them while they're down, because they're always down, really.
They had their glory days when Joe Quenneville was leading them to multiple Stanley Cups, but it's been a rough ride the last few years. So I'm surprised a team that's got Connor Bedard, such a gifted offensive player, you know, just can't gain any traction as a team. I guess you'd have to look at the front office and ask them why they can't improve the Blackhawks and build around Connor Bedard. Maybe it's going to take a little longer than they thought. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I feel like ever since when they won those Stanley Cups, right, towards, the mid-2000s, and then they got weighted down by those contracts, like with Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith, and they just couldn't recover from that. Now Connor Bedard, very exciting, but the Blackhawks are struggling. The Blues looked good. The only team to be 3-0 in Winter Classic record.
I'm really very fired up by the Blues, the big change under the Blues since Jim Montgomery came the head coach. Look, they went through a little quiet phase where they weren't great, but the bottom line, you know, his first game as the Blues coach was November the 25th. And when he took over the Blues, they were 26th in the league in points percentage. So there's only five teams worse than them at that point in time. Since Monty's been the coach, the Blues are number 10 in the league in points percentage, 618. And there's only been Vegas and the LA Kings and Edmonton and Colorado. Only four teams in the West have been better than the Blues since he became coach. The question is, and they've improved so much in terms of their goal share, the high danger areas have like flipped dramatically in favor of the Blues. The only question is, like, the Blues, like, if they had Montgomery as the coach, if you take his the work he's done in his how many games is it? I'm sorry. 17 games, right? They would be on a pace to finish like with 93 points. Like if he coached them the entire season, it'd be 93 points. But I still don't know that would be good enough to get them into the playoffs. So because the West is so stacked, I mean, the Western Conference is really strong. Montgomery, there's no question he's turned the Blues around in a pretty convincing fashion, but I still don't know if it's going to be enough to get into the playoffs. They're going to have to play really great from this point on. And I looked at Money Puck today, moneypuck.com. The Blues have about a 13% chance to make the playoffs. But that can change. They just have to get really, really hot. And they have to avoid any kind of prolonged slumps.
Yeah.
Hey, Bernie, it's Mike Elam. Did you get a chance to watch? Hey, man. Did you get a chance to watch any football over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean,
I guess the case would be. I felt yesterday was Sunday.
Yeah,
it felt like Sunday all day long yesterday.
Yeah, I thought Boise State acquitted itself well. I know they lost by 17 to Penn State, but you know they ran more plays, they had more yards, they just kept self-destructing once they got into Penn State territory. But I think Boise State, I thought they were actually going to give them a closer game, but you know, when you turn the ball over four times, you're going to lose. I thought that Texas kind of set itself up to be in a dogfight that it never should have gotten into. And that was a great game.
It was.
Credit to Arizona State playing entertaining football and scaring the devil out of the Texas Longhorns. But the Texas Longhorns refused to run the ball until the fourth quarter. Their game plan was about as incompetent a thing as I've witnessed during the college football playoff season. I mean, Texas got a big offensive line. The way they have won traditionally this season, they overpower teams. They wear them down. But instead, Steve Sarkisian, the coach, kept throwing the ball, and there was a lot of quick possessions. And so the Texas defense was on the field all day, and they ultimately ran out of gas. So he negated with that game plan that he basically gave away an advantage that Texas should have had. And I don't understand it. They are very fortunate to survive. Now, as far as Ohio State, maybe the best thing that ever happened to them was losing to Michigan because it brought the whole team together. And, you know, they're like us against the world. You know, our own fans turned on us. The media turned on us. Everybody's turned on us. No one believes us. And I was joking around, you know, the old expression, the cliche is like, well, they got a chip on their shoulder. I mean, that team that which shredded Oregon yesterday, that team's got a wood chipper on its shoulder. I mean, I don't think anyone can beat them. If they maintain this form or even close to it, this is clearly the strongest team in college football right now. And they this is the team I think that everyone thought that Ohio State would be, but there were a couple of bumps along the way. But the way they recovered from that loss to Michigan, man, it's kind of scary if you have to line up and face them. And I know Texas will get that shot next.
It just kind of shows you that there are some mortal sins you cannot commit and still continue to live. And one of those is lose to Michigan when you're Ohio State. They don't care if you win a national championship if you lose to Michigan. Michigan game, to some of those fans, is a bigger deal than the national championship, yeah. I think, which is kind of funny.
I just wonder if, you know, after two incredibly convincing playoff wins, you know, they destroyed Tennessee and absolutely destroyed Oregon, who was unbeaten coming into yesterday. I wonder if the Ohio State fans will they allow Ryan Day to stay as our coach? I'm just wondering, is it okay for him to continue?
I think he kind of has to win the national championship to keep his job, which is an amazing thing to say.
I think he maybe, let me put it this way. I think if he gets to the national championship game, he'll keep his job.
I think you're right.
Listen, that insane faction of Ohio State fans don't speak for all their fans. They're just the loudest and the noisiest. And at least by winning a couple of these games, if we are to believe what Kirk Herbstreit was saying about Ryan Day's getting threats and him, Ryan Day having a higher security to protect his home, from the lunatic fringe of Ohio State fans. At least now these two playoff victories and the way they annihilated Oregon, maybe Ryan Day doesn't need to have a food taster for a while. I don't know.
He definitely had one just, before.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
I don't know. They're fun. And then today will be fun too. I think Notre Dame beats Georgia, but I say that wincing because it's like, don't count out Kirby Smart. He always gets that team ready to play. I think Notre Dame's really, really good, though. And remember the game they had with Georgia Tech? And remember the quarterback for Georgia Tech? His name's Haynes King, and he ran Georgia's defense around in circles.
He did.
He passed the ball really, really well. He had a huge game, and Georgia really couldn't stop him, even though they won the game in eight overs. You know who's a similar quarterback to Haynes King? Riley Leonard is a sort of – they're virtually the same in terms of their style of play. So I think Riley Leonard will make a big difference for the Fighting Irish today.
Bernie, just in your experience in sports, because we've seen games, professional sports, college sports, after tragic events, national events, with what happened in New Orleans, right, the Sugar Bowl now, it will be played this afternoon instead of yesterday. Do you think this affects the players a lot, their mentality? Is it once they're on the field, they won't be thinking about it anymore? How do you think this affects that game?
I think once the game starts, that's all that's on their mind. I mean, and it has to be that way. I mean, if you're going to do your job and you're going to try to win a national championship, you have to block everything out. And I don't think that sounds callous to say that. That's just the reality of sports competition. And what I have found through the years is that whenever there's some national tragedy or just some horrible thing that has happened that in the days before a game, well, we recognize that the games are secondary, of course. But this has always served as kind of an inspiration. If you go back to 9/11 and when baseball resumed its schedule and the scenes around ballparks all over the U.S., including Jack Buck with that stirring poem delivered at Busch Stadium, the first game back from 9/11, the country was inspired. Sports fans, players were inspired. Everybody wanted to give their best and be at their best. And it was like that when the NFL resumed as well. There was that game where the New York Giants were playing at Kansas, and you wouldn't have known that they were a visiting team because Chiefs fans, and this was all over the place, were honoring the fallen heroes, you know, the fire department and the New York PD, things like that, and also just grieving for New York, even though a lot of the people that died 9/11 were from various places. But the whole country was fired up to support New York after 9/11. And I really think there's a dynamic in place for this type of thing today. I think we'll see two very emotional teams, and I think we'll see an incredible crowd that before the game, when it's time to have a moment of silence or whatever ceremony they're going to have, you're going to see America at its best, and we'll all be very inspired by it.
Looking forward to the, I guess, Cotton Bowl a week from now. We talked about Oregon we talked about how Ohio State just pummeled Oregon, and then Texas barely squeaked out a victory. Fair to say that Ohio State has 99.9% of the momentum going into the Cotton Bowl?
If they play the way they've played, you know, against Tennessee and then Oregon, and this is kind of like a reborn team, so to speak, in terms of their spirit, no one's going to touch them. And certainly not Texas, because Texas is – listen, Texas is really, really good, but they're vulnerable, and I'm not sure why they're so vulnerable in games. I mean, I don't know how they could lose to Georgia two times, especially when Georgia brought in the backup quarterback because he had to finish the game in the SEC championship. And there's just the way they let Arizona State hang around. I mean, if that happens in the Cotton Bowl, it'll be another blowout.
Hey, Bernie, I did want to ask you one thing about that Texas game, because we saw something happen with the MVP of that game that you never see. The losing team had a player that was named the MVP of that game. Is it Cam Scadabo? Is that how you say his last name?
Scadabo, yeah, Scadabo.
That kid was a monster, and he willed himself that entire game to just keep Arizona State in that game and to bring them back. I don't know that I have seen a performance that great in years from one individual player. I mean, he put this team literally on his back. He threw a touchdown. He ran in a touchdown. He carried in a touchdown. I mean, it was amazing.
He was a beast. And
he was.
He's been their driving force all season. I mean, he's been a great, great, great back. And it's why he finished, I think, fifth in the Heisman.
He did.
I'm a Heisman voter, and I wish I would have had like four places. I would have put him fourth, and I nearly put him third, and I almost regret that now. I think I should have voted him third. And the dangest thing about that was that Texas had him bottled up. They were doing a great job on him for a really good amount of that game until it got late. And then the Texas defense was on the field a lot because of their malfunctioning offense. And Scadabo and a pretty good Arizona State offensive line started to beat up on Texas. But there were times where, you know, he was getting sick on the sideline. He looked absolutely exhausted. He'd have to leave the game and just go sit down for a minute and then come back in. The fact that he summoned that energy and that will to do all those incredible things in the second half of that game,
yeah,
that's about as impressive as I've seen in college football this year. And no disrespect to all the other players, but no, I hadn't seen anything like that, because it looked like he was about to tap out, that he couldn't go anymore.
A lot.
He found this hidden reserve of energy and resolve, and it was really – It was really an amazing thing to behold, and they got it right by naming him the MVP.
I agree. It was one of the most inspirational performances I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like Michael Jordan's flu game. Yeah. I just hate throwing up, so if you can do anything while you're throwing up, I'm super impressed. It's the worst. Bernie, thank you so much for joining us. The first time in 2025, before we let you go, do you want to tell us about Saliga?
It would be my honor. Thank you, Amy. And Mike, thank you too, my friend.